show. Yes, it's the weekly soiree through the world of Mac news. I have a fantastic panel to assist me in decrypting and analysing last night's keynote. It looked fairly simplistic, though, I have to say. Top left, Mr. Chris Breen. How the devil are you, mate?
I'm well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me back again.
Oh, mate, it was a pleasure. I thought we were the guilty ones last time.
Well, you were, but still, thank you.
No worries, mate. Pleasure. Next to him, Adam from the cupboard.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, mate. How's life in the cupboard at the moment?
It's all right. I hopefully got the lighting a little bit better today, so.
Excellent. I've just realised I posted your Marmite, and would it have gone to your old address?
Very likely, but I still have that house, so.
Oh, okay. That's fine, then. It should be okay.
I will get it.
It should be there in plenty of time. Hang on. I've lost... oh, no, I haven't. There he is. Adam Angst, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. I don't get to be in a cupboard. It's just... Who knew?
It looks like it's a larger cupboard with lots of birds and a penguin. Happy Feet is in the corner with you.
It is a penguin. That penguin is actually from Australia. So one of my Aussie friends brought it over once years and years and years ago. And what do you do with a 4-foot penguin but keep it in your office?
Is that solid or blow up?
It is a blow up.
I was going to say, because Christ, that'd be a hell of an excess baggage charge.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, but nonetheless, like you bought a seat for that? No, we blew it up.
An emperor penguin that's actually the size of an emperor.
Precisely. Yeah. We go for realism there.
And last but by no means least, it's Mr. Paul Kent. How are you doing, mate?
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm all right. You've had better weeks, I guess.
It was a unusual week for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think the top story for us, certainly on a personal level, stuff what Apple do, that's just a mere coincidence of this bagatelle, is that Macworld is on hiatus, in inverted commas. No show for 2015. I'm pleased to say I went once, if nothing else, and I've ruined women in the past for other men, but I had no idea it extended to expos as well. What on earth has gone on, Paul?
Well, you know, the show has taken on a different character in the years since Apple left. It was written about quite eloquently by Chris and Adam as well. Mm. It's a different time. The market has changed. The types of things that you need in order to hold a big trade show put on by a big company, certainly all the dynamics there have changed. So, you know, the types of big companies that would come and exhibit certainly aren't the same anymore. Our market is full of a lot of really small companies that are awesome software developers, and a lot of accessory manufacturers. So those small companies aren't really big enough to support an event the size of what we try to put on. And, you know, the accessory companies, we loved having them. But if you guys remember going back to when the iPod was brought out, Macworld started to take on a character of these, you know, bags and batteries and cases and cables. And while we loved having them as customers and as exhibitors, it's not the most compelling trade show in the world to show a bunch of bags and batteries and accessories like that. Mm. So those two factors, the things that people wanted to see, software, became manufactured largely by very, very small companies. And the types of companies that were exhibiting, while they were great and often a lot of really cool things that people could find, it wasn't really the mix of things. So as those companies started exhibiting more, attendees got concerned about the mix of products they got to see, and so attendance started to decline a little bit, and then the attendance of the exhibitors started to decline a little bit because there weren't as many attendees. So it was kind of a circle, and it got to the point where, although the last show was certainly valuable for everybody who participated, it got to a point where it just wasn't enough for IDG to be able to turn the lights on and put on a good show for people. So rather than continue this trend, because we tried a lot of things, I mean, we tried different price points. We tried incenting software developers. I mean, if we would have got 1,000 of the app developers, it certainly would have been a different thing. But that's not what happened. So dynamics, market dynamics, you know, the ability to find information on the internet, the ability for people to meet up at other types of events, and then the dynamics I described about the exhibitor world, all those things kind of converged, and it's just... It's not right to do it anymore. It wouldn't be representative of the market that we've been serving for so long.
I mean, one of the things that was an innovation last year that I adored was the Appaloosa area. That was because it was. This is going to sound like a negative, but it's the positive for me. It was kind of like a rummage sale. you'd turn up and you'd walk around these little guys that were just stood there, you know, with a bench out and a stand and a carpet bag, if you like, almost. And you'd go, wow, that's such a cool product. We found Iographer, and I mean, I've about damn near kept Iographer in business this year because I bumped into the dude at Macworld. And that for me was one of the huge positives of last year's show.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, Adam and Chris have been going to the show for a long time. Adam, for, you know, as long as I can remember, it used to be that those exhibitors, the cool, hidden, up-and-coming guy was the added bonus, you know, the secret sauce of Macworld. But like and I said, as the dynamics have changed. I mean, remember, when we started in 1985, there were 5 to 7 companies spending a ton of money to try and become the de facto word processor. There were 5 to 7 companies, 10 to 20 companies trying to become the de facto database. And the categories were all shaking out, and software cost $1,000 to buy. And these were very different dynamics, but all those companies now, I mean, you think about it, a lot of those app developers are selling apps for 99 cents before 99 would be an expensive app. You got to sell a lot of apps at a trade show to justify the time that you put in there. So that's part of the things that made the show change and difficult. We were trying to cater to those people, but we really needed critical mass of those people to participate. But I will agree with you. It was always finding those kind of hidden gems that was the really astute showgoers bonus of coming to the show.
Yeah, I mean,
the other thing that was really interesting about Macworld back in the day, and this is going back quite a bit further even than the last, say, 10 years, was that because software and hardware was expensive and there were often really good deals at Macworld, is a lot of consumers wanted to come and would just shop till they dropped. I mean, I would see people, you know, with bags and bags of stuff that they had bought because, you know, if you were going to pay, you know, $400 for a package and it was going to be $150 at the show, you were there to take advantage of that deal. So, you know, that brought in a lot of people who, you know, might not have otherwise come. But, you know, as you say, well, when the apps are 99 cents, it's just really hard to do it, particularly when you can't even sell at the show. You know, the best you can do is hope that people will remember your name and go home and shop on the App Store.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. I don't know that I speak for everyone, but I'm gutted. I'm absolutely gutted that I'm not going to be there in March for Macworld. Now, you've kind of have hinted there that this wasn't the correct format and that it wasn't the way that Macworld needed to go and to be. So Macworld has kind of almost come to an end, I would guess, reading between the lines of what you're saying, Paul. But you're definitely saying something there along the lines that makes me think that there's a bit more open. There's a bit more, there's somewhere to go with a community event, or is that not the case?
No, I want to clarify this. You know, when people ask, what does hiatus mean? So there's no plan to do the event in 2015. That's absolute. And IDG as a company, you know, we still own an incredible website called macworld.com where we have great writers. We still reserve the right to revisit this and see if there's a different combination of ways to do things. I mean, I'll be very clear. There's no plans to do so at this point in time. There's still a Macworld in China, which is a really cool show, actually, and they get quite a few people there. But in the U.S., there's no plans to do a macro right now. What hiatus means is we reserve the right to revisit in the future.
Sure, sure. I mean, so there's no other event styles planned, taking the workshops forward without the expo or...
What we have announced that we're continuing on is our Mac IT event, which is our enterprise event. So we get people from, you know, Fortune 500, Global 500, large educational institutions, who want to come talking about integrate Apple technology into big enterprises. That event continues on. It's going great. It's going strong. It's a Mac-specific event, and that event continues. But this kind of broader, generic, how to do everything with your Mac, how to be a power user, how to discover cool features in iOS and OS X, that event, as we know it right now, is not happening.
Okay. That's I'm terribly sad, as I said, but certainly, Paul, if there's anything going forward that British Tech Network can do to support any future get-together, then we're first ones to sign up for a ticket.
I will tell you, you came last year and you really took the show by storm. You're in Paul's, you know, enthusiasm and, you know, your appreciation for the show. It wasn't lost on anybody, specifically me, that you guys enjoyed the show so much. So I'm glad you had a chance to experience it one time. And I hope in the future maybe something will happen, but we'll cross a bridge when we get there.
There's about 30 BTN listeners coming with us this year as well. So,
and thanks to all you guys.
No, absolute pleasure, mate. I say, if there's anything we can ever do in the future to support any event that you've got going for the community, then we're right there. There's a few people have said already that Doc said last night he's going to take his Macworld money, he's going to come to our bash. So, so if you're kicking around anywhere near the UK on the 4th of July, our bash will have a certain Macworld flavour to it, if that would be awesome. All right with you.
Awesome.
We're also...
Do you need a band, by any chance?
Well, no, that was the next question, because I'd talked to Mr. Chaffin, and I'd kind of... maybe I'd bullied a little bit, I have to admit, but I talked my way into the percussion section on the Triangle this year as well. So, I mean, if I'm still available, fellas. When's the next gig?
You book the hall, we'll be there.
Is that really? I get the local... Well, actually, now, I've got a village hall booked on July 4th, 2015, and if the Macworld All-Stars want to come and play that gig, then I don't know how much money we can chuck towards that, but there'll certainly be something coming your way. We might not be able to pay for all of it.
But Chris, you're still band leader, right?
Sorry, what? Chris is the leader.
I was band leader last year, so I think it's your turn, Paul.
No, there's no pass. There's no more Macworld, so there's no one to pass the torch to. So the last guy who had it gets to keep it.
The only thing.
Really.
Okay.
And for second prize.
Yeah, right.
It's like, okay, is that like the world?
In Bakersfield next week.
Is that like the Soccer World Cup? Once you've won it three times, you get to keep it. Now, I can't see Cirque du Mac dying if I've got anything in my head about Dave Hamilton, because he seems like the kind of guy who doesn't let things go easily. Could we be suggesting that there might be an event kicking around at WDC where the All-Star Band may be regathered?
It's a good idea. I mean, I think if somebody, the guys have been talking all week, and, you know, we certainly are hoping that it can keep going in some form. It's a band, and if there's an event and someone wanted us to come, we had...
that
we
sounds
had
a bit IT.
Played their birthday party in Portland, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, but, Kelly.
You know, like I say, hey, you know, if the time is right, the guys are all there. We're still practicing our instruments every day, and I think we could get through a show pretty good no matter what. And if someone can get us there, we'll play.
If you have a hall and maybe no one else can fill it, then maybe you can call the All-Star Band.
That's right.
Can you play the theme from the A-Team? We could do like a build section on video. Wally Chinaski can do that.
Chris is a musical genius. He can play anything.
Right.
You know, the thing is, but we rehearse just once before any gig, and that's once a year. So, yeah, if we can get it in like 10 minutes, we're good. Otherwise, as leader, I'm pretty tough. So, you know, if it's not working in like the first couple of minutes, cut.
Right. Well, we've got a hotline to Paul Kent, and we've got a hotline to Chris Breen, and we've got a hotline to Dave Hamilton. So watch this space, because if anything happens, we'll be the first to let you know, because we'll be there as well. As at the moment, Paul and I's kind of back burner plan is to hit WWDC. So, Adam, he said he's talked to you about it, or you've talked to him about generally the vibe at WDC. There's an awful lot to do, even if you're not in at the conference, isn't there?
I've actually never been to WDC itself. Back in when we lived in Seattle, we would actually fly down for the weekend afterwards, because all of my Australian friends, who one of the ones who brought the penguin, would hang around for a while, because you don't fly all the way here from Australia and then fly home again. I mean, I think the jet lag would just kill you. And so we would go to a party at Rick Holtzgraf, the guy who wrote Solitaire to Dawn's house, and kind of debrief on everything that happened. But since we're on the East Coast, it's enough more of a flight that we stay home and just follow it all remotely.
Right. And Mr. Christensen?
Yeah.
You go, don't you?
No. I've actually never been to WWDC.
Oh, right. Okay, then.
I'm in the developer program.
That's, yep, that's just for the build. So
here and there, and I've always wanted to go, so, you know, maybe this is the year.
Well, I was going to say, how'd you fancy coming and sharing with me and Paul again, then? Dub-dub.
Yeah.
Because Paul's had friends who've had tickets, and he's also got a guy that he works with who went a couple of years ago but didn't have a ticket, and he said there was plenty to do. During the day. Yeah. You don't have to sightsee because you can't get into the expo. It's so I think we're going to...
Well,
At least look for a social event.
The Alt Conference. I'm getting the name. Is that they still called Alt WWDC, or they renamed it this last year? I think.
Just Alt Comp.
Alt Comp.
Alt Comp. Yeah.
That'd be good. We'll be there. There's going to be somewhere. I just can't not go to San Francisco as well. I mean, I really did love the place. Apart from the beer. Some of the beer was a bit... Moving on to Apple then. Apple had a keynote last night. We got iPad Air 2. We got iPad Mini 3. We got a 5K display. We got a reduction in price in the Mac Mini and a bit of a spec bump as well as... I mean, before we get into the nitty-gritty, overall, happy with that? I thought it was a good keynote, or was it a little bit on the... Well, you did it because you hadn't got a great deal else to say for the rest of the year otherwise.
I think it lived up to the invitation, which is basically we need to clear off all the stuff that we've been meaning to do for a while, which means, yes, we need to have a new iPad because it's that time of year. We need to do that. Yosemite is designed largely for Retina, so yes, our most popular desktop Mac needs to have a Retina display. Mac Mini, oh, yeah, we still make that thing. We shook it, and it's new. Try this one.
So you were a bit like me then. You were a bit kind of, meh.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was kind of hoping for, I'm still hoping for Apple TV and doing significant things there, but I've revised my thinking. I think that's probably an Apple Watch related release, so maybe we're looking at 2015 for that. But no, I mean, it was, because it is that time of year where you have new iPads, so that was that, and they threw some extra stuff in there, which was fine, but, you know, not an overwhelming event. I think they already had that last month.
Mm.
Yeah, I think you have to keep in mind that Apple, as much as Apple seems to have a reputation for, you know, massive innovation and these incredible announcements and everything like that, when you actually look a lot more closely, those, it's really a case of punctuated equilibrium where, you know, Apple just kind of goes along slowly increasing and then slams something out and then just keeps again going along slowly. A lot of incremental upgrades, and they do that. You know, they do that. They've always done that. And it's just, it's not surprising. And they're taking advantage of their efficiencies and, you know, costs of things coming down. And then, you know, something like a Retina iMac, as much as in some ways it's not that interesting, it's just an iMac after all. It's still the amount of engineering that went into that is just astonishing. I mean, I've been kind of, put it this way, I'm going to be ordering one as soon as I can wrap my head around what's involved. And the thing that I'm fascinated by is that I always work on double monitor Macs. I always have two monitors. Always since 1991 and the SE30, I have had two monitors. And so, but you cannot get, a matched Thunderbolt display because you can't drive it. It's just too many pixels. And so I think that there's going to be something there with, having to have side-by-side Retina and non-Retina. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see.
Is that the significance of the absence of the of a cinema display with this? The fact that to externally drive that and not take it direct off the processor would be too difficult?
From what I heard, you'd need two... you'd actually need two connections, two DisplayPort connections to the computer. That's how Dell does it with their monitors, which is ugly beyond belief. And I'm not in the slightest bit surprised that Apple's not doing that. And then I guess you drive each half of the panel separately.
Yeah, I mean, old Greeny went on a bit of a rant last week about plugging in anything other than an Apple mouse and keyboard into an Apple computer is blasphemous, nay. he has a certain point in that if you're going to make an iMac, there's an awful lot of people use twin displays. I run on two displays here. I've got two displays over here that are joined. And you kind of would love to have two cinema displays side by side. And the iMac and the cinema display were a matched pair. And that isn't going to be the case anymore. You're going to have your beautiful, super gorgeous, super slim with a box, effectively, on the other side. But, I mean, the other thing that's never always bothered me within that as well, sorry, but I'll finish my point in a second, someone else can talk, is that I don't understand why they didn't just recase the cinema display as it currently stands and at least make it look the same.
I wanted to ask this panel here because I'm really curious. As that was happening and I was thinking about that, you know, why didn't we get a 5K display to hook up to the Mac Pro? I started to feel that it seemed like Apple was further pushing the Mac Pro into a smaller niche and really it felt like they, in a lot of ways, either it was kind of indirectly, it was we're really marketing the 27-inch iMac with the 5K display at the Pro Mac user. I mean, they had that video with the pro photographer focusing on that. They made a big point of the fact that with this screen, you can get a full, pixel per pixel 4K image up in Final Cut with all of your controls and panels and things like that. And it kind of seemed like they were really saying this, you know, if you want the Apple product with the best display for doing your pro-level work, we think this iMac is it. You know, they didn't say that directly, but it kind of felt that way to me. I don't know if anybody else kind of saw that or felt that.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, if you think, I haven't shot for PCs in a long time, but to think that this is a $2,499 computer in this day and age is really kind of an amazing thing. And
yeah,
seems like that this would be the best package for pros right now.
I think there's two tiers of pro in terms of the 4K market. There's not a lot of 4K available for consumption. I know that you've got the Super HD stuff with Netflix that you can use for 4K, and that there's pushes about YouTube might be able to stream 4K in the next 6 months, but you know, no one's really doing 4K at that kind of level that they'd need this constantly. As a small jobbing videographer, most of what I make at 1080p, and I make it look absolutely luscious as best as I possibly can, and then the person that I've sold it to throws it in a conference room on a projector that's WXGA at best, on a wall that's 40 feet away. So you know, I'm kind of sitting there crying at the back of the room every time they put it on. So there's absolutely no imperative for me to go to 4K whatsoever. I want frame rate. I want to be able to do 240 frames a second at 1080. In terms of camera diversity or diversity of camera information, I want a camera to go in that direction, and everyone else seems to be going in the 4K direction over here.
The other thing that I'm not entirely certain is that how much of a difference the 4K will make for those of us who don't do any video or photos or anything like that. That I've always had Mac Pros up till the current cylinder one because I needed double monitors and I wanted the most power so that I wouldn't be waiting on anything in sight. And obviously it's been clear that my next Mac, I mean, I'm running on a 2008 Mac Pro right now. My next Mac would be an iMac. I've been holding off sort of as long as I could, but you know, I'd kind of like to see the 5K display next to a non-5K display in the 27 and just see if it really makes a difference when what you're doing is text. You know, I do a lot of writing and a lot of reading, and that's, you know, that's important to me, but the graphics, to the background for me.
I think you're going to get a lot of readability if you look at your I was just thinking when you were talking there, Adam, God, your word is going to look superb. Or pages is going to look awesome. The kerning of the fonts.
I'm
going to
have the crispest Monaco in BB Edit. So, you know.
If you're one of those people that does it for the art.
On that iMac was the most amazing.
It is.
And Paul, you alluded to that. You know, coming in at $2,499, I think the Dell display you mentioned, Adam, is like $2,500 just for the display. And like you said, you have to use two display port connections. It's really, you know, kind of two half displays sort of married together, whereas Apple has it all in one plus an entire, you know, killer iMac attached to it, you know, computer attached to it for the same.
Ultimately, price. It just tells you how cheap the computers actually are these days. Because we know how expensive a Mac Mini is, put it that way, $400-$500.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? The I was talking with Brian Chaffin a few weeks ago, and he was saying, you know, okay, so you're talking about an i5, that's $20 at wholesale at best. So, you know, okay, $30 for an i7 at wholesale at best.
Yeah.
So actually the computer, and we're throwing in a computer for free. Yeah, well, actually the computer that you're throwing in for free is probably, not $200 worth in that whole package. It's the screen that's really, and the R&D on that screen that you're really looking to recover. I'm trying to look up on the website, but the store is down at the moment, so I can't find a price. I was going to try and spec up, you know, kind of what's the minimum on the Mac, the iMac that I would like.
I did that yesterday, it was more like around 3,000. You know, by the time you get the, because of course you're going to get the faster processor. I mean, duh. I haven't had a Fusion Drive, but frankly, I'd go for an SSD because why not? You know, I don't want anything mucking with my disk performance. I've gotten so addicted to SSD, and so by the time you max that out, at least 16 gig of RAM, you're talking 3,000, a little over.
Yeah, that's quite a lot. What about the Mac Mini? I mean, Chris, you kind of was a bit, you know, well, yeah, okay, we still sell that thing. I thought there might be a form factor change, as did a few other people. But the thing that really I was cool about was a couple of years ago when they went from 499 to 599, I was kind of like, that's the wrong thing to do, because this is your drug sale into the Mac world. And it's I think it's super cool it's gone down to 499 again. There's no UK prices on that, by the way. I'm trying desperately to find a UK price, but they haven't published one at all since last night.
Ewan, somebody quoted £399.
Well, that's what it used to be, £399.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think the Mac Mini is a really good computer to have in the mix, and it was indeed a shame that Apple hadn't done anything with it in so long. Not so much, I mean, partly they were saying, oh, your first Mac. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I mean, you know, that's if you don't actually want to jump in and get a real computer. But not that it's not a real computer. But, you know, you're going to get an iMac, really, if you're going for a Mac desktop for the most part. But where I actually see the Mac Mini is much more interesting is that second computer, or the computer you're going to be using to serve media to your Apple TV or something like that. You know, we have a much older Mac Mini at this point that runs OS X server, and you know, it holds video that we feed to the Apple TV. It does, you know, it's the backup destination for a lot of backups, all that kind of stuff. And so that's a situation where you do not even want an iMac there, because why would you want to waste a monitor on something you're never going to look at? So you're going to control only remotely, and you know, something cheap, fast, and quiet.
Yeah, there's a reason they sold it in that server configuration. Is that there's a group of people at Apple that understood that there are people like us, and I do the same thing. I use it for my entertainment. I use it for backup. I serve contacts and calendars through it. It sits here. I don't have a monitor attached to it. I just screen share into the thing.
Sounds like you have exactly the same computer I do.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not a brand new one. You know, it's not an ancient one either, but it's a couple of generations old, because it doesn't need to be powerful. It doesn't need to do a whole bunch of stuff. But again, they sold it in that server configuration because somebody at Apple said, oh yeah, there are people out there who are really going to want to do this. This isn't powerful enough to do X, Y, and Z. You're not going to do massive video work on it. Or it's a kid's computer. I have another one upstairs to my daughter. But for me, I love that server configuration. As a home entertainment component, it's great. Unfortunately, you have to be a little bit technically adept to use it that way. I mean, I have one attached to the television upstairs. If I turned that over to my wife, and she's really smart, she would leave me if that was the whole way of getting entertainment, because she'd just say, what are you talking about? No, I'm not going to do that. Mouse for my – no, and I'm not going to do it remotely through a trackpad either. So for me, it's great. I can set it up in ways that are transparent so that it can serve the Apple TV, for example. But yeah, it's kind of that weird device that's really helpful to geeks, and it's also good for kids, but it's for your sort of everyday hardworking computer, not so much.
I mean, do you have problems? Because, I mean, you guys are all sat on Mac Minis at the moment. In the cupboard to my left here, there's three Mac Minis running three of your four Skype lines, and then a Mac Pro at the top doing the fourth. I mean, because one of the things that I had an issue with was trying to run a Mac Mini without a screen attached, and I had to do the analog hoop the staples in the back of the VGA. So you hoop three of the ports together on the back of the VGA, and it stops it from looking for a monitor. It thinks it's got a monitor attached. How do you run your new style one without
Apple sharing?
Yeah, there's a couple of dongles that will do the same thing, although I actually, you know, again, because I have an attic full of old hardware, I have a 17-inch Apple Cinema display, one of the kind of white ones that had the really weird port, and you had to buy the special thing.
Oh, Paul's gone. Everyone else still there?
Yeah.
No, Paul went, sorry.
Oh.
Just disappeared. I know about screen sharing, because I have to do it to get you guys on. But it's that thing of you can't do screen sharing without it having a physical connection of some description to a monitor. It just doesn't seem to like it.
Yeah.
Oh, mine works fine. I've run mine for years without any monitor attached to it.
Well, I'll have another try then.
The thing that I've heard is that if you don't have a monitor attached to it, some of them will it will have sort of worse graphics. Because they won't see that they need to be kicking in their graphics acceleration.
Right. Yeah.
But again, I have a book about OS X Server, which unfortunately didn't get out before OS X Server 4.0 came out yesterday. But yeah, we have a little note in there somewhere about running, you know, getting one of these dongles from, I think, newer technology, or there's someone else, just as a way of, if you are seeing slow screen sharing performance on a headless Mac Mini, you know, you can plug one of these $15 things in and it will just make it think there's a monitor there, and that'll kick in its graphics acceleration.
Well, if you've got a VGA cable... If you've got a VGA cable, you can just you can put three staples in the ports. Mm-hmm. There's a sequence of the ports at the back, and you put those three staples in, and it it says that it's linked. But you can only go up to 720 on the resolution.
Pin jumper it with
The days.
So those are jumpers.
Yeah, they're jumpers, but they're staples.
Yeah, yeah. No, sorry, I was just getting confused between the American and British. So if I said jumper, you just say, no, I'm not putting sweaters on them. I'm putting staples.
Yeah.
Staples? Really? Cold. You got a staple? No.
These Mac Minis have no trouble staying warm, dude. what do we think?
It may help that mine's old. I think that maybe that's part of the problem, too. I have an original Core Duo, not Core 2 Duo, Core Duo Mac Mini.
Yeah.
You know, actually, I have mine plugged in via HDMI, so that probably takes care of it.
What did we think to iPad Air 2, then?
I'm so glad they brought the numbers back. I cannot tell you how annoying it's been to write about these things.
The iPad. Like, yeah, but which one?
Oh, it's faster and thinner, too? Okay, that's fine. But as long as they brought the numbers back...
So, I mean, did we think that was a positive upgrade?
The last iPad I bought was a third generation. And because the fourth generation and then the Air and the Mini, they didn't seem enough different. And so, you know, I've been kind of saying I might have to get the next one. And, you know, I have to say the iPad Air 2 looks truly stunning as far as an iPad goes, whether or not it's enough different to bother replacing a third generation, I'm not sure. I don't really feel like my third generation has problems and for what little I use it for. So I think that's something that Apple is facing in general with the iPads, is that they hold their, I don't want to say value exactly, but they hold their usability much better than phones do because of not being linked to those, linked to that 2-year contract in the same way.
Yeah, I think they couldn't have done anything different than they actually did yesterday with iPad Air 2. You know, they put the fingerprint recognition on it. They did a good spec update in terms of the processor and the use of metal. They gave the size options so it's in line with the iPhone. And what else are you gonna do?
Yeah, oh, really.
Gold.
It's got a hover. I mean,
skimmed a bit more off the top. And that's it. Laser cutting the pencil was pretty cool, though. That was a good effect. I like that.
They're really into lasers there at Apple. You know, freaking lasers everywhere you look.
It's got old Doc Rock was on the doing the coverage with us last night on the keynote, and he's just spent about $30,000 on a laser etcher in his basement, and he takes all his stuff and puts it in it, and comes out, and it's got a new logo etched into the surface of it. So he was well into that. When it kicked off last night.
But the cat didn't like that.
Well, I dread to think what he's etched. Because when you get one of those, things, it must be like looking around when you're 10 years old, when you've got a hammer and a nail, and wondering what nail will actually go in.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh. And then the cat's doing the impression of Jesus 3 minutes later. go on.
I was going to say, I think Apple, you know, has gotten itself into, I don't know if I'd call it a dilemma, but I mean, the iPad's reached that maturity stage where, you know, like Adam was saying, people are getting to the point where they're not going to upgrade their iPad every time a new one comes out. So we've reached that sort of point that Apple reaches with a lot of these products where it's just everything's iterative. And, you know, I've owned every iPad that Apple has put out. So I have an iPad Air, and I'm seriously thinking that this time around, this might be the one that I finally skip, because there's just not enough different. You know, the processor upgrade is really, really nice. The camera upgrades are nice. I mean, there's a lot of nice things in here, but I can't point to any one thing and go, this is a must-have. I got to get rid of my iPad Air. Like even Adam was saying, if you have a fourth generation or even maybe a third generation, you might still be able to kind of skip it and get along just fine.
Well, I think, I mean, Apple's marketing for the iPad actually makes me feel a little inferior. I mean, what I do with my iPad is so much less interesting than what they show people on top of the windmills and in the operating room. And I'm like, huh, I watch Netflix on mine while I do push-ups, you know. I mean, I feel like a complete wuss when it comes to being a good iPad user. But as a result, you know, there's that sense of why would I want to spend another $500 on something that I can watch Netflix on?
Right. Now, I mean, if you watch that while you're doing push-ups, do you have like a bracket so you can hold it in front of your face at a constant distance? Because that would drive me mad.
I've thought about that because now the push-ups are not so much the problem. But there's other exercises where, yeah, you're kind of moving around too much, and I want it like hanging out right here. But no, I have this Zero Chroma makes it. It's a case that opens, and then it's got a kickstand, and so it's really good because I can just have the iPad, you know, in front of me somewhere on the floor and move it around as I move around and I do that. So yeah, I mean, it's great. That is the primary thing I do on it apart from like checking my books and, you know, when I'm doing production and I'll check a book in iBooks or, you know, every now and then I'll browse the web on it in a soft chair downstairs as opposed to at my, you know, my Mac Pro with double monitors. But problem is that for nearly everything I do, the Mac Pro with double monitors is simply better.
Yeah.
I might jump from an iPad 3 to this new one. An iPad Air, and I found the performance difference was significant from the previous one, particularly with iOS 8. Mm-hmm. Can run a little sluggishly on older iPads. So if you're having a problem with performance on your current iPad, I think the new one is definitely worth looking for. I don't know about the iPad Mini with Retina, though.
Add Touch ID there? I mean, there wasn't really anything different other than Touch ID.
And a gold one.
Ooh, I can't tell you how completely I wouldn't be seen in public with that.
And the processor and the increase in metal.
I felt they should call it the iPad Mini 2.1.
Well, they did show a graphic, didn't they, with the graphic, they showed a graphic of the graphics performance, and if you look at it, it kind of teeters along up until it gets to iPad Air, and there's a big significance between iPad 4 and iPad Air, and then to iPad Air 2, it just goes vertical.
Yeah.
There's a massive increase in that processor for graphics function, which, I mean, they showed Replay, didn't they, the video editing software, and the thing I said, as soon as I go, oh, Jesus, that's me out of a job then. Because
I think the real deal in the iPad Mini now is getting the iPad Mini 2 32 gigabyte at $349.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't need the Touch ID, because that's all that's different, you can get, you know, a iPad Mini 2 with 32 gigs for $350 now.
Yeah, Windrider in the chat room is pointing out that the Mini 3 still has the A7 processor in it.
All the specs are exactly the same. The only thing they did was add Touch ID and give you a gold.
And Touch ID is a big deal if you're out and about. You know, that if you take, I mean, the thing is that I went from an iPhone 5 to the iPhone 6. So it was my first Touch ID experience. I used my wife, Tanya, we alternate iPhones. So Tanya got the 5S with Touch ID. And I mean, I was allowed a thumb so I could use it. But nonetheless, to my mind, Touch ID is more annoying than not Touch ID if you're not going to have a passcode. And so on an iPad that doesn't leave the house, I'm not going to have a passcode. I mean, that's just annoying. And so as a result, adding Touch ID to the iPad, it's great if you're out and you're going to have a passcode. But otherwise, I didn't see it as a big win there.
Well, I think in many cases, though, if you've been using Touch ID for a year or so, then you pick up your other iOS device and you put your finger on it and go,
yep.
All right.
Yeah.
But you're still going to push the button. And if you push the button and it just happens... Because you're not,
yeah,
you're not.
My cats will get into my iPad, and they will.
Damn those cats!
So I passcode everything here.
If you put them in the laser engraver, Chris, it wouldn't be a problem.
This is where Chris finds one of his cats has actually got into the iPad using the correct passcode, and the cat looks up at him and goes, "Yeah, Yeah. You know you're
really
in trouble.
1111? Come on.
Yeah.
I think it's been proven that Touch ID will work with paw prints as well as thumbprints.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, Touch ID, having Touch ID and 1Password and LastPass and things like that so that you can actually authenticate, and once Apple Pay is out for that too, that is actually where I think Touch ID will be truly, truly huge.
Yeah. It was funny to watch Phil Schiller sort of, you know, gloss over the iPad mini update. Oh, and yeah, it's an iPad mini.
Now, see, actually, the most interesting thing about that mini is they backwards named the previous iPad mini to iPad mini 2.
Yeah.
It was previously iPad mini with Retina display? I hate writing that. But the fact is that they actually somewhat came to their senses that this was kind of a stupid thing to do naming-wise.
That had slipped past me, but you're dead right. Windrider's in the chat room again. He's pointing out iPad Pixel Mater was a good demonstration. And those two boys came on, I said, these boys are about to become billionaires. Because that was a really good display.
The replay thing, the video thing, I had no idea about that app.
Yeah, no, I downloaded it last night, but I haven't actually used it for anything because I've got no video on my iPad. I don't use it for anything like that. But it did look amazing.
I did like how Phil Schiller made the comment that, people love taking photos with an iPad, and it's really okay. I'm like, you still look like a dork.
Still not okay.
But I think
they brought those guys out instead of, so they didn't do game demos. And normally they do to show off the
graphics.
Look how cool this is, the metal thing is. I think that they're trying to underscore the idea that you can do real work with an iPad, increasingly so. So that's why I think they had Pixel Mater. And also that Adobe's getting into that as well and doing some of their stuff on an iPad. They're trying to move beyond this notion that this is only for consumption, but you can actually do real work on here. And look how impressive this kind of work is that you can do on this thing.
If you were in an operating room or on top of a windmill anyway.
And you're right. I think they're advertising. A lot of the stuff they do is still really stuntish. You know, like, one in 10,000 people is going to use it this way. And you're absolutely right. We tend to use it more like, hey, I watch Netflix on it, or I'm reading my book on it, or I'm doing kind of this pedestrian things. So I think having something that are kind of consumer-focused, which I would say both those products were, gives people an in to, I can be creative on this thing without having to be standing on a windmill or look like a 26-year-old supermodel.
Right. At the same time, too, they were also able to show that, metal is not just for games as well, right? Because they made a point of, we were able to optimize this with metal for doing this. So there was a little message in there for developers, too, saying, don't just think about metal as a game thing.
Right.
There's some power here that you can leverage as well.
But I think we have to admit that the highlight of the keynote was actually Craig Federighi talking to Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
I mean, it took them so long to get to real stuff. I'm like, are they just going to have fun the whole time? I mean, it's Tim Cook making jokes about his fashion sense and Federighi going whole hog with the security thing. And I mean, really now.
Yeah, they've tried a bit too hard to be funny of late, and it's kind of fallen on deaf ears. But I thought Colbert's finishing line was superb. And you know what I look at when I look at my wrist? No. My wrist. Where's the watch?
I mean, Federighi's really good, although this was the longest he's had to kind of be in character and rather than just sort of making quick jokes. And I got the impression that he was really nervous talking to Stephen Colbert.
I think that last line from Colbert, I got the impression from watching Federighi's response that wasn't on the script by any stretch of the imagination.
Do not poke Stephen Colbert.
Well, I think just in terms of stagecraft, I think they had a harder time working a smaller room. I think the audience is much closer. You can see more of them. Because the presentation didn't seem as smooth to me, that when they're working a huge room like WWDC or the last month's event, things are maybe they rehearse more, maybe they're more comfortable not seeing people and being in that large space. But the intimate space, I saw kind of more, they seem to be a little more self-conscious than they normally are.
Yeah. No, I think Federighi tries too hard sometimes, but generally he's very good at presenting. The interesting thing about
in his element, I thought though. You know?
You're right. I thought he was really relaxed, and I did like his little aside where he made the joke about fashion sense. You know, the kind of wink and, you know, the point, finger pointed. That was cool.
Wasn't there something about he'd been, like, some pundits had dinged him for not being fashionable or something like that. And he's like, so the people who know even more about fashion, even than me, you know what I mean? It just, it's such a different world. And I'm glad that they're acknowledging in some ways that they really don't know this stuff. And that's because that's fine. I mean, you know, that they've got people who are making sure they do it right. Tim Cook does not need to be hobnobbing with, you know, the editors of Vogue every day to be able to be CEO of Apple.
He's got
but you're right. But just having this, having some awareness that they don't have a fashion sense and hiring people that do.
Yeah.
Makes so much sense, because if you look at the wearables market and all the ugly crap that people have put out simply because it does a certain job, where Apple goes, okay, well, let's back up a minute. Yes, it needs to have that kind of functionality, but it's not going to sell to more than 10,000 people unless we make this attractive to common people, which Apple has done all along. They've got Johnny Ive they can point to, but even in this case, they said, okay, but this is beyond that. We need to go to the watchmakers, to the fashion industry, get people who work in it, and convince those people who are in there that this is actually something that people are going to want to wear.
Knowing what you know is the battle. Knowing what you don't know is the war. Windrider says, no, it was unfunny shite. See, now that's what you want. That's what 100. Who needs 140 characters? That's a review right there. One last thing to talk about with the iPad that we didn't mention was the fact that it comes on board with a SIM now. So you're not putting your own SIM in. When you get this thing kicked off, it starts off, and you look for a plan there. And I've got to say that fills me with dread. Because if I use Three Network over here, which is fairly well used, I think, so I think it wouldn't be missing off the plans available. But if that's missing off the plans available, and then I'm being forced into another carrier, and especially in America where you've got such a horrific lack of competition, I'd see that as a huge negative, surely.
Depends on who's on board. And, I mean, here they've got, I think, AT&T and Sprint and T-Mobile. And I think it's EE in the UK at the moment. And if you want, you know, Verizon in the States, I guess you have to go in and have Verizon activate it, which is going to be a little inconvenient for people. But they do have a solution for that. So I'd imagine with Three, it'd be the same thing.
That scares the hell out of me.
Part of EE. I don't know how that works over there.
Three piggybacks sometimes off other stuff, but it's not. You wouldn't get it the deal on this. EE is using Kevin Bacon for all its advertisements over here at the moment, and they're very good advertisements, but you can see that Kevin Bacon's very happy doing them because he's obviously getting very well paid, and that's reflected in the EE prices compared to everyone else.
Over here, we just get people who know Kevin Bacon.
Exactly, the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. But the point is that that if that's limited, I mean, there's going to have a problem with monopolies and mergers in the EU at a certain point if they do that. But that is a good indication straight away of how this is a negative practice for competition, which is something the EU will slap them for once they work it out.
Now, what is it with the EU and this whole caring about consumers thing? Because over here, we just don't give a damn.
Yeah, exactly.
We just feed them to the NSA.
No, I've got to say, I mean, there's a dickhead called Nigel Farage over here who runs a party called UKIP, the UK Independence Party, and all they want to do is get out of Europe as fast as they can. And I actually really like being in Europe. I'm je suis un européen, most definitely, because they've got a lot of good safeguards for safety, for legislative control, and for stopping customers from being extorted by commercial business practices, which are less than honest.
My favorite part about this SIM thing is Apple being able to take it and brand it. So it's, you know, they're calling it the Apple SIM, like it's some special thing.
Can you take it out though and put your own in?
No, you can't. It sounds like it's programmable. So, like, again, if you want your iPad on Verizon, you take it to Verizon, and I guess they have some sort of way to, you know, flash the chip that's in there. It doesn't sound like there. I was looking at the images. I don't even think there's a SIM slot in there. And we also didn't talk about the fact that they removed the sleep wake rotation lock button.
Oh, yeah, it was too thick.
That's probably true.
It wouldn't fit. I have heard some people complaining about the rotation lock, people complaining that's only in Control Center now. So I don't have a feel for it. I have it on the iPad 3. It doesn't really bother me much one way or the other. So
I only use it when I hit it by mistake, and then I turn and it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. And then
You're like, hey, how come it's not rotating?
I leave mine set to mute. I like it for just muting it. But I mean, between do not disturb and sort of scheduling that, I even kind of stopped using it for that purpose. So.
Yeah, I have my iPad turn on Do Not Disturb 24 hours a day, because otherwise, someone chats me and like four devices go off. So,
and you don't have hands free because you're doing your push-ups and
he's like, I am busy, man.
What happens when you sweat on it? Or don't you?
No, I don't. Well, see, it's in front of me. It's not under me.
Okay.
Androids don't sweat.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by the Network Union. We love them to bits. They're absolutely brilliant. If you've got SIPs, MPLS, WAN, all that kind of stuff, then you need to talk to these guys. Go to britishchatnetwork.com/sponsors and drop them your email address. They'll get back in touch with you and they'll tell you what they can do to help you. Even works if you're a small to medium-sized enterprise, as well as. If you're already signed up with BT, don't worry, nothing's going to change. You're still going to be paying your bills to BT as normal. What you get is an extra layer of support that just slots in from Network Union. They're absolutely brilliant. One last appeal, if we could, though, with these guys. We've got a lot of consultants that listen to the shows, and they go into corporations and they give support on a regular basis. What we'd like you to do is, if you can, push the Network Union's name forward to the decision maker that you work for about getting them to come and help with the service. You don't have to get the name of the person and then pass it on to Network Union. Just send a little email to Network Union that says, just want you to know, I've passed your name on. Thanks for everything that you do for BTN, so that they can see that you're working, the BTN army is working for their benefit as well as. The kinds of stuff that they do, we're not going to be selling 10,000 of these a week. They're big contracts. So, just give them some indication that the BTN army is working for their favour. That'd be great if you possibly could. And of course, UK2, we've been with them for 5 years. We're going to be with them for another 5 years at least. They pick up all of the bandwidth for broadcasting the shows. They give us an unlimited server, so you can listen to every single show that we've ever done. It's on the server, video or audio. Talking to Paul Wheatley yesterday about looking back through some past episodes to try and find a piece of information that we had about our service, and he said, well, where are we going to get that from? I said, it's on the show's on the server, we can go back and find the server, it won't be an issue at all. So we went straight back, found the episode that it was relating to, and there you go. Anything you like, you can listen to it. It's news based a little bit as well, so obviously there's a bit of catch up to be done, but there's a lot of fun in those shows as well that aren't news based. And if you are listening for news, then listen to the British Tech News Show. Comes out Monday to Friday. It's available from 5 to 6 o'clock in the morning. It's done by the fantastic Carl Swagger, who gets up nice and early in the Philippines, records it all, puts it on, and it's a 5-minute soundbite of everything that's gone on in tech in the previous 24 hours. We're getting some rave reviews on that. It hit number one in the iTunes store last week, and I think it's down to about 8 or 9 at the moment. But he's doing a fantastic job. We're getting some nice reviews. We'll read a few of those out next week. So please go and have a listen to that. And if you'd like to support the network, we've changed the support us page on the homepage. Go to the support page, how to support us, and there's a whole list of things that you can do there. It's not about just getting your money off. You can donate through Patreon, that's great, or you can send a one-off donation through to the PayPal account. All well and good, but we've got real needs for people to help us with design, help us with coding, help us with improving the service, writing applications for us, anything like that you can do for us, then please sign yourself up, send us an email and say, I'm here, I can do these things, tell us what to do, and we'll get you involved. Thank you to everyone who does. If you know where the new logos are coming from, you can see one just down here, and there's one just on the screen here. Those are done by a lovely lady named Christine Wild, E on the end of Wild. She's at Christine Wild on Twitter, and she is a lovely, talented designer. So we're having a rollout of all of the new logos in the next couple of weeks. Everything will change on the website, and then we've got a rollout of a new website that's planned for 3 months' time. So. With big changes going on at BTN, and a lot of it's thanks to your Patreon donations. Thanks to everyone who does give us a donation, because it makes a huge difference to us. It's time for the cool thing. Mr. Breen, do you have something that is cool?
Yes, I do.
That's a pause.
as you may have heard recently, Macworld, the magazine disappeared, and the staff was slayed, generally. But what that does mean is that that the few of us that survived were able to go into Macworld Lab and plunder it. And so I have now in my office the most expensive Mac ever made, the Mac Pro cylinder, high-end with the super-duper graphics and all that stuff. What it has done, though, is it requires now that I have a bunch of Thunderbolt accessories, because I didn't before. So one of them that I just purchased is this wonderful thing here from Seagate, and it's a little dock. I'm going to just show it up here. It's a little Thunderbolt dock. It's like $100 here in the U.S., and even though it doesn't fit all that well, as you can see by the gap between,
coaster,
you can shove your SSD into there, and it works beautifully, and it's really, really fast.
I have one of those. They are absolutely beautiful, and all you have to do is stick a coaster to the back of the dock.
Where would you get such a coaster?
I'm guessing the local hardware store will have one, or your local Home Depot will have a coaster.
Okay, because I was thinking an establishment that served alcoholic beverages, and we don't have
Well,
those here.
You've got that, but then you run the risk that there's some alcoholic beverage still in the mat. So.
But, all right, so what we're looking for is kind of the high-tech coaster.
No, I've got one of those, and I carry
it around.
What about
an iPhone 6?
That's a bit too thick, I think, for it.
Oh, just a little too much. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Let's wait for the iPhone 7.
And the touch expensive in comparison to a $2 coaster. But go to Cracker Barrel. They'll have one or something like that. But those are brilliant. They're absolutely stunning. I have one myself, and they're absolutely brilliant. I just put a coaster in it, and it fits perfectly then.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
I've got a set of four coasters, actually, and if I can find the other three, I'll send you one. Because they're the perfect... I bought them because they're the perfect size.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. I bought them because they were the perfect size. So if I can find the other three, I'll mail you one.
Excellent. Thank you very much. But yes, you're right. It's great. It's very convenient. It's small enough to throw in your bag, throw an SSD on there, and suddenly anything you attach it to that has Thunderbolt gets really fast.
It's only got one Thunderbolt, so it's an end device. You have to put it in after your display, or it's at the very end of the chain.
Well, on the cylinder Mac Pro, you have six Thunderbolt ports, so you're okay.
You just picked that so you could rub in the fact you've got a Mac Pro, really.
Yeah, I did. Here's my camera.
Am I the only one here without a Mac Pro?
Well, I have a 2008 Mac Pro. Does that count?
Yeah, no, I've got a 2008 Mac Pro. Yeah. Oh,
I'm
look
the
at
only
that.
One without a Mac Pro.
Look at that.
Never owned a Mac Pro.
Shiny gorgeousness.
Yeah. I do have a blue and white G3.
I have a PowerBook 100 in the attic.
I've got just over there. Hang on, let me show you a picture. Where's it gone? Where's the picture gone? Right, there's my desk. Over there, you see that? That's a Mac SE, but it's a prototype.
Ooh.
There's no serial number on it.
Ooh.
And I've got the original bag that it was brought over to the UK in.
Yeah, I have a couple of SE30s, but their hard drives have Stiction, so they're not real active these days.
Cool. Mr. Christensen, what do you have for us?
This is probably a thing that is cool to me, but a lot of people are probably going to waste their Friday on now. it's a game, and it's a frustrating, infuriating physics game. I think they want to say it's like an endless runner, but it's more like an endless faller.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Daddy Long Legs. And what it is, you're this little cube with really long legs, and you tap and one leg goes forward, and then you tap again and the next leg kind of goes forward very awkwardly. And the point is to see how far you can get, sort of, you know, walking back and forth. And you can't get very far at all because you're going to almost immediately fall over. But, you know, it's like one of these that's completely addictive because you just keep thinking, there's some sort of pattern here that I'm missing, or there's some sort of thing in the physics. And I think it's a sort of cruel joke because I think they, you know, each time they start it up, they change the algorithm or something like that. But you convince yourself that, no, I'm going to figure this out. And you just keep playing and playing and playing and falling and falling and falling. So I think I'm on my 876th fall, and it will tell you how many times you've fallen, so you can see how many times you've been defeated.
Is that supposed to incentivize you? You're this shit. Keep going.
It's one of those games, though, that, you know, it's like Flappy Bird or any of the others. I never played Flappy Bird, but I would imagine it's the same sort of adrenaline rush that you get when you do that. And I keep coming back to it. And what's great is it's tied into Game Center, and part of the reason I'm picking it is because I want more people to join me on Game Center. I think I'm Matt Cast on Game Center, and challenge me and push me, drive me to drive my daddy long leg dude further. Absolutely. I'm at about 44.33 meters now.
Wow.
Of course, so beat that.
I watched...
It's free. I think it's got ads in it. Although I noticed, for whatever reason, there's ads on the iPad, but they're not on the iPhone. So I like to play on the iPhone because you don't see the ads there. Okay. So I don't know how that revenue model works, but
I watched Charlotte Henry have a go at Flappy Bird and manage three tubes, and I scoffed bitterly, and then I couldn't get past the first tube. So
it's sort of like that, but it's entertaining, and it's one of those quick games that you could just pull out and you know, do it real quick when you have a couple minutes to just kill.
Excellent. Good pick. Thank you. Adam, do you have a cool thing?
I do, and this is slightly self-promotional, but it's mostly for my friend Joe Kissel. At 1 o'clock last night, we finally finished publishing three of our books about Yosemite. Yeah, Yosemite comes out. We want to get the books out. And two of them are pretty obvious. Joe's Taken Joe Lookert in Yosemite, and Shelley McFarland's Yosemite Crash Course tells you all about the new features. But the third book is really quite interesting. And seeing if I can get a picture up on my iPad quickly here to show people. It's called Digital Sharing for Apple Users, Take Control Crash Course. It's kind of a long, convoluted name, which we argued back and forth about over and over and over again, till we finally decided, okay, we just got to do this thing. And what it is it's all the ways you can share stuff between your Macs and your iOS devices. And if you think about sharing, it's a complicated topic. Sharing is not just, oh, I want to share between my Mac and my iPhone. Maybe I want to share I'll share my data with my wife. I want to share calendars with my kids. I want to share my Mac screen with another person. I want to sync passwords between two devices. So this sharing concept has a whole lot of ways of kind of, you know, extending beyond just the obvious, you know, one-to-one. And so what Joe did is he actually looked at all the ways you can share stuff. So you want to sync photo libraries across devices. You want to sync photos and devices across devices. You want to send them to other people. You want to share photo albums with other people. You want to do file sharing. You want to do one-way file sharing where people can't change the stuff. You want to send contacts to other people. You want to share your Mac's internet connection. You want to share phone calls between your iPhone and your Mac, which you can do now in Yosemite and iOS. You want to send web links, you want to sync passwords, you want to use family sharing, all this kind of stuff. This is what digital sharing for Apple users. It's just 87 pages of lots and lots of these little couple page how-tos about how to do all this stuff. And, you know, it's one of those things where I get this all the time where people are like, oh, how do I do this? And I'm like, okay, that's actually a little more complicated than you would like it to be, you know, that you need to explain Dropbox, or I need to explain iCloud or something, when just to answer this simple question. And so Joe has done a bang-up job of just encapsulating all this stuff into one really quick, easy-to-read book.
Excellent. Now, I'm going to need a lot of help, because after the show, I'm going to try and stick Yosemite on. I'm going to go for it. I may regret it, but I'm going to go for it. And it's my turn. My cool thing, and this is going to sound really crap, but I didn't get one till last week. A very kind listener, Mac OCD on Twitter. I was bemoaning the fact that I was given a Pebble watch by someone when I had another listener, when I had a Windows phone. and I couldn't use it because the Pebble application was just crap. It wouldn't keep the Bluetooth connection. So Paul Wheatley said, oh, can I have a go with it? So I said, yeah, fine, you have a go. And he absolutely adores it. And now I got my iPhone 6. It was like, great, I can have a go with the Pebble Watch. Are you still using that, Paul? Yeah, I love it. Okay, I'm fine. I can't use it then. Mac OCD very kindly said, look, I bought one at the start with the Kickstarter project. I bought two of them, and I've never even opened the second one. Do you want it? Yeah, I'd love it. What do I owe you? He said, no. It's sat in a box. It's sealed. I haven't even ripped the seal on it. I don't even know if it works. Just have it. So thank you so much, sir. That was really kind of you. And he sent it through to me, and it's just a standard black one. But I've kind of have been a bit pissy about the watches because I don't wear a watch. I haven't worn a watch for 10 years. But I'm wearing this, and I'm loving it. And the wife hates it because it goes off at dinner, and I look at my watch. So I'm going to have to find a way. I wish you could do not disturb for dinner. On notifications.
I'll call her up and tell her just to hide the charging cable, and then you'll never be able to use it again.
Yeah, because it is unique. It could do with being mini USB, but or micro USB. But the sad part for Pebble is, much as I love your watch, thank you very much, it's superb. The only problem I've had with having it is it makes me want to buy an Apple Watch, which I didn't want to do before I got hold of it. And I think that's unfortunately where Pebble's going.
Well, I think the Apple, I mean, I have a Pebble and have since March. I got it to go to Macworld in part. And the thing that I think is true, particularly with Pebble's recent price drop, is that they've really changed the market. That Pebble's saying, hey, $99, you can get a Pebble. Apple's going to start at $349. That's a big jump.
Yeah, but you look at the stuff that Ferengi was doing with it last night, running his PowerPoint presentation, his keynote presentation and stuff like that. That's pretty cool.
No question it's going to be cool, but you know, I think basically the watch market will be changing. I've used the Pebble. I don't wear it all the time because I spend most of my time in my house and, you know, my phone is just right there. But when I'm out and about, I really like it because it's nice not having to dig the iPhone out of the pocket. And my killer app actually was Google Maps walking directions when I was in San Francisco for Macworld. Rest in peace. Because you'd bring up directions on the iPhone, stuff it in your pocket, and every time you were walking, you'd come to an intersection, and your wrist would buzz. You'd glance down at your watch, and it would say, turn left. And you just turn left and turn right and turn right again, and poof, you were there, and without having to, you know, look like an idiot tourist with your iPhone in front of your face.
Yeah, no.
My killer app was on the Pebble was Pebble Bucks, which let me put my Starbucks card on my watch and pay for all my lattes with my wrist. So I'm
too easy.
Looking very forward to Apple Pay on the Apple Watch.
Yeah, no. I think it was interesting last night that they didn't run their own keynote presentation from their watches. They kept handing the clicker over again, but I think that could change presentations at conferences and stuff like that quite happily. Excellent. Where can we get a hold of you, chaps? Mr. Breen.
I am at macworld.com a lot. And otherwise, I have a personal website, which is chrisbreen.com, where I write about music and stuff that matters to me that's not generally technology related.
Excellent, mate. Adam Christensen, where are you, sir?
As always, over maccast.com is the website, Maccast on iTunes, and also check out the iOS show, which is the show I do with Jeff Gamet and Michael Johnston.
That's
iOS show, Doug.
That's doing pretty well in the UK store at the moment as well for iTunes. Well done, mate.
Cool.
So it's charting. And Mr. Inks, where are you?
Well, you can read my weekly or daily and weekly stuff at tidbits.com. We've been doing that for almost 25 years now. And then our Take Control books, you can find it www.takecontrolbooks.com. So three new ones last night, and we hope to have another one about iOS 8 real soon, as soon as we get our hands around 8.1.
Excellent. Thank you. We'll be back again next week, 3 p.m. The weekend starts with the Mac Show on a Friday. Come and join in with all the fun, and have a good weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll